So she enticed and won our battle-hardened spirits over, and there we sat at ease, day in, day out, till a year had run its course, feasting on sides of meat and draughts of heady wine. But then when the year was through, and the seasons wheeled by, and the months waned, and the long days came round again, my loyal comrades took me aside and prodded, "Captain, this is madness. High time you thought of your own home at last, if it really is your fate to make it back alive and reach your well-built house and native land." Their urging brought my stubborn spirit round. So all that day, till the sun went down, we sat and feasted on sides of meat and heady wine. Then when the sun had set and night came on, the men lay down to sleep in the shadowed halls, but I went up to that luxurious bed of Circe's, hugged her by the knees, and the goddess heard my winging supplication. "Circe, now make good a promise you gave me once. It's time to help me home. My heart longs to be home, my comrades' hearts as well. They wear me down, pleading with me whenever you're away." So I pressed, and the lustrous goddess answered me in turn, "Royal son of Laertes, Odysseus, old campaigner, stay on no more in my house against your will. But first another journey calls. You must travel down to the house of death and the awesome one Persephone, there to consult the ghost of Tiresias, seer of Thebes, the great blind prophet whose mind remains unshaken, even in death. Persephone has given him wisdom, everlasting vision to him and him alone. The rest of the dead are empty, flitting shades." So she said, and crushed the heart inside me. I knelt in her bed and wept. I'd no desire to go on living and see the rising light of day. But once I'd had my fill of tears and writhing there, at last I found the words to venture, "Circe, Circe, who can pilot us on that journey? Who has ever reached the house of death in a black ship?" The lustrous goddess answered, never pausing, "Royal son of Laertes, Odysseus, born for exploits, let no lack of a pilot at the helm concern you, no, just step your mast and spread your white sail wide, sit back and the north wind will speed you on your way. But once your vessel has cut across the ocean river, you will raise a desolate coast and Persephone's grove, her tall black poplars, willows, whose fruit dies young. Beach your vessel hard by the ocean's churning shore, and make your own way down to the mouldering house of death. And there into Acheron, the flood of grief, two rivers flow, the torrent river of fire, the wailing river of tears, that branches off from Styx, the stream of hate, and a stark crag looms, where the two rivers thunder down and meet. Once there, go forward, hero. Do as I say now. Dig a trench of about a forearm's depth and length, and around it pour libations out to all the dead, first with milk and honey, and then with mellow wine, then water third and last, and sprinkle glistening barley over it all, and vow again and again to all the dead, to the drifting, listless spirits of their ghosts, that once you return to Ithaca you will slaughter a barren heifer in your halls, the best you have, and load a pyre with treasures, and to Tiresias, alone apart, you will offer a sleek black ram, the pride of all your herds. And once your prayers have invoked the nations of the dead in their dim glory, slaughter a ram, and black you, turning both their heads toward Erebus, but turn your head away, looking toward the ocean river. Suddenly then the countless shades of the dead and gone will surge around you there. But order your men at once to flay the sheep that lie before you killed by your ruthless blade, and burn them both, and then say prayers to the gods, to the almighty god of death and dread Persephone. But you, draw your sharp sword from beside your hip, sit down on alert there, and never let the ghosts of the shambling shiftless dead come near that blood, till you have questioned Tiresias yourself. Soon, soon the great seer will appear before you, captain of armies. He will tell you the way to go, the stages of your voyage, how you can cross the swarming sea and reach home at last." And with those words Dawn rose on her golden throne, and Circe dressed me quickly in sea cloak and shirt, while the queen slipped on a loose, glistening robe, filmed me, ajoyed the eye, and around her waist she ran a brocaded golden belt, and over her head a scarf to shield her brow. And I strode on through the halls to stir my men, hovering over each with a winning word. Up now! No more lazing away in sleep, we must set sail. Queen Circe has shown the way. I brought them round, my hardy friends in arms, but not even from there could I get them safely off without a loss. There was a man, Elpenor, the youngest in our ranks, none too brave in battle, none too sound in mind. He'd strayed from his mates in Circe's magic halls, and keen for the cool night air, sodden with wine, he'd bedded down on her roofs. But roused by the shouts and tread of marching men, he leapt up with a start at dawn, but still so dazed, he forgot to climb back down again by the long ladder. Headfirst from the roof he plunged. His neck snapped from the backbone.